Hey y'all, welcome back to another episode of Bed Talks. We are so excited to have our guest on tonight. We're going to be talking to Miss Jennifer Hurvitz. Found her on Instagram, like I'll be finding all my people that we get to talk to. And Kay helps me too with finding some people as well. And I know your theme is doing relationships right. So I'm just curious, why don't you just introduce yourself briefly to the audience?
Hey. Hi, guys. Hi. Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be here. You know, I stalk you all the time, too. So that's where I found you.
We're mutual stalking.
Stalking each other. That's it. We're just mutual stalking. I love you. I love everything you do. I'm just really glad to be here. So, I'm Jennifer Hurvitz, and I'm a relationship expert and a divorce coach and a dating coach and a podcaster. I don't know. I do all kinds of things. But I tell people that I started this journey because I took a disaster-like divorce and I turned it into a career. I figured, you know what, like, there you go, you know, you get divorced and next thing you know, you're doing all these things. I started by writing a blog and I thought no one would ever read it. And next thing I knew, people were reading it. And then I wrote my first book. Let me think how this went. Wait, started the blog, wrote a screenplay, wrote a book, started my podcast, wrote another book. I mean, I don't know, where do I stop? I just, you know, just keep going.
What's the name of your books, by the way?
Okay, so my first book was, One Happy Divorce, Hold the Bullshit. And the second one is What It Coulda Shoulda, A Divorce Coach's Guide to Staying Married. And that one was chosen by Oprah. It was on OprahMagazine.com.
Nice.
That was like the best day of my life.
I'm sure.
Besides my boys, awesome. Besides having my kids.
I think that, so I know, Kay, I've shared some things that Jennifer, you post and write about and talk about. And I think one thing, let's just get into it. You go against the current, which is what I like about you, of what people say. You keep it very real. And there's something you talk about, like with relationship habits that most people think are toxic. You disagree on some of these things. What are some of those things that you kind of disagree on?
Oh, gosh. You know, that's so funny. I think I have a podcast coming out about it, but I try to remember. So, like, for example, you know, everyone says you can't go to bed angry, right? That you shouldn't go to bed angry. I don't agree. I think that, and it's funny, I have a dear friend who actually taught me this, and I feel like coaches need coaches, so I learned it from her. You can go to bed angry, and you know what? If you shouldn't go to bed, you shouldn't stay up all night fighting, right? It doesn't help anybody to go, like, stay up and be exhausted. And, you know, I have a client who, his partner would come in at, you know, right before bed and start up. Like, that's when she wanted to fight. And he was like, look, I'm exhausted. I can't do it. Like, you know, if you go your separate ways and you go in there, it's okay to say, look, I love you. You're my thing. You're my person. You're my whatever. But I need to go to sleep. And let's have clearer heads, clearer minds in the morning and discuss this at a better time when we're both not exhausted, right? It doesn't mean that you're disrespecting your partner. It doesn't mean that you don't value what the person has to say. It means that you value them more. You're just, you know, you don't want to be up all night till 3 o'clock in the morning fighting out something that can be accomplished with clearer heads and minds. Does that make sense?
But is that going to bed angry if you guys have somewhat resolved, even if it means putting it on pause, you know, to discuss at a later time? I wouldn't consider that being angry,
okay,
per
good.
Se.
Good, I agree with you. Because I think a lot of people do. I agree with you. That's great. Yeah, I think it's not. I think at that point you said, but here's the thing that I come up against, is that one person, the person that says, let's pause and wait till the morning, they're not angry anymore. But the person that doesn't is still angry. Mm-hmm. And they're like, well, I'm not okay with that. I don't want to go to bed. And I still feel like that's what I'm trying to say. So if maybe you both understand that you need to put it on pause, then no one's angry. Am I confusing you?
No, I think you're speaking to something bigger. Like sometimes in disagreements, there is no resolution in that moment. You're just too heated to sort through it. So sometimes it's okay to like go to your respect. We call it going to your respective corners. Look, we're not going to talk about this right now. We'll readdress it at another time because you're right. As things elevate, if you keep doing it, it just goes to it spirals out of control.
Oh my gosh, right? And nobody wants to do that at you know 12 o'clock at night or even you're exhausted, right? I tell some of my clients that it's even better to approach it and say, look, let's stop, let's pause, let's go to sleep. And then what about tomorrow at, what looks good? Like make a date, make a time when you're both able to talk And, you know, reassess when you're good. You're not tired.
But, you know, that's a hard thing to do when there are emotions involved. Now, it would be nice if we can cut a switch off and say, you know what? Okay, let's set it for tomorrow at 3 p.m. Emotions normally don't run in that manner. And especially if it's something that's very intense, you know, we've not, as humans, I don't even know, it is healthy sometimes, I agree. Yeah. But other times, because we are emotional beings, you know, that thing can linger with you until the set appointed time, you know, that you guys have.
But what about this? But what if you knew, what if you had that in place already? What if you, so let's say you blew up one night and you had this huge fight and it went on like you're saying, right? But what if you discussed it the next time and said, look, instead of that happening again, let's have that mutual agreement that we aren't going to do that again. Mm-hmm. And we're going to, you know, hold ourselves accountable. And next time we're going to make a date if we have something important that we want to talk about. So instead of getting to that place, you already know that you're going to approach it as such. So I walk in the room and I say, look, Jim, that's my partner. Look, Jim, I have something I really want to discuss with you. I'm mad. I'm angry. I don't want to get into it right now. It's 10 o'clock at night, but I think we should reconvene in the morning when we both have our heads straight and we're both, you're not exhausted. I know you worked hard today. You're tired. I'm tired, but I'm going to tell you, I'm not happy with X, Y, or Z, right? That's kind of what I'm saying, more so that, does that make sense?
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
You already,
it's like rules. It's like rules of engagement. And I think couples need to kind of determine those rules of engagement before they get to those heated moments.
Absolutely.
Right. And it's not always, you're right. It's not always that easy to disconnect, but I think sometimes it at least gives you a bridge or like a roadway of like, okay, we came to this agreement. These are our rules of engagement. We got to like kind of disconnect for a moment because we're just now going in circles and it doesn't always play out that way, but you want to get to a point where you can respect someone having their moment of needing solace or needing
and it is good strategy. It is good strategy, you know.
Sometimes it just doesn't work, does it?
Right. Well, I'm going to use this analogy. You know, we both, me and Elizabeth, you know, really we like sports. You know, I do a lot of coaching, sports coaching, and you know, I played as well as an athlete. You know, the coach will tell you, okay, look, keep your head. Now, that's the strategy. That's the plan. And everyone is amped up. Keep your head. We can't afford penalties. We can't afford to lose, you know, our level of play and give in to the opponent. Everyone is ready. Then the game starts.
And you're like, whatever.
All of that goes out of the door. You know why? Because we are emotional. And now, you know, especially in sports, and we can say that even in relationships, the adrenaline rush is real. You know,
I'm with you. So I go 0 to 60.
I picked up a little bit of that.
My partner's in the other room. He's eating dinner. He's like, "Oh, let me tell you." But that's another thing. A segue, really quick. Another one, if you don't mind, is you know, people think that it's toxic to fight. That there should be no fighting. That it's always supposed to be, you know, this rainbows and sunshines and beautiful. No, it's not. You're allowed to fight. It's how you fight.
It's fighting fair, right?
It's fighting fair and how you mediate your conflict and that, right? I mean, so that's not.
And it's good you said that. We were a few weeks ago. When we had our podcast, we were interviewing a couple of individuals, and I said, you know, you have to fight for anything to get to that next level. And I associated that with even in fighting, you know, relational fighting. I know most people would think, so you're saying we're supposed to fight? No, what I am saying is it is necessary, even in relational fightings, to get to that next phase, that next level, whatever that may be. And like Elizabeth said, as long as it's fair fighting, when you keep hitting below the belt, that is beyond toxic. It's no way you can resolve when you're continuously hitting under the belt. So
I think there's definitely a thing of healthy conflict, and I think you need that in relationships because we are, you know, you're getting to know that person, you're discovering that person, and so as you discover someone, you're going to discover there's things you like and don't like, and there's going to be things you don't resolve. Like I think sometimes as humans, we're like, I got to resolve through all these issues. No, you're not going to resolve through every issue. There's going to be things where there might be a disconnect. I'm curious, I didn't get to watch the Tinder Swindler, but
my goodness.
But from what I've heard, my sister, she gives me all the...
My clients, my phone is ringing off the hook. They're like, well, should we go off Tinder? Should we not be on Tinder? I'm like, oh my gosh, it happens on every app. It doesn't...
Yeah. So I guess my thing is people are really fixated on online dating, and I get some of the advantages. You know, you can reach more people. You can kind of see someone up front as far as what you want, what you don't want. But do you feel like it's negated people kind of doing a hybrid mix of meeting people in real life or being, you know, open to it. Because now I'm hearing, like, when people say they want to meet someone in real life, that's considered to be creepy versus meeting someone online. I don't know if you've heard that. Like, people are like, it's kind of weird to walk up to someone and start a conversation. Because now
we... Oh, no, I love that.
I know.
I'm old-fashioned. So, no. My clients that come to me, it's so hard. I really feel like, there are so many dating apps that we don't even know about. There are so many. And I think a lot of us are stuck on the big five, right? I don't need to name them. The big five, right? Yeah. The top five. And there are so many other ones out there that we don't even, my clients are on apps that you've never even heard of, mm-hmm. for that reason alone. And there are certain apps that are for fun. They're for fun. Tinder being one of them. You swipe. It's for fun. It's for a dopamine rush, right? Mm-hmm. You get that rush. You find someone, it's like ding, ding, ding. And it's the rush goes up and you're excited and you get that rush and you also get addicted to it. And then there are apps that are more for intentional dating, where you know that you're going to put the time in, you're going to spend the money, and the person on the other side is also going to be intentionally dating, putting the time in and spending the money. That's what you, if you want to find a partner, like a long-term relationship and a partner that you want to, those are the apps that you want to be on. Mm-hmm. You don't want to waste your time and your energy with someone who's flip-flopping back and forth and spending all their time and not like, that goes without saying, right? So to answer your question, I think the in real life stuff, I tell my clients all the time, look, he's not gonna fall from the sky. He's just not. You have to be intentional if you wanna meet someone. When you go to the grocery store, your hair and whatever, and you don't care and have your head down your face. I say, get your head out of your apps. Put your face up, look around, make eye contact. If you wanna meet someone, you have to put yourself out there, right? I have no problem if someone walks up to me in the grocery store and says, hey, whatever. I don't have a problem with that. I don't think it's creepy. I don't know.
Hold on. I have to stop you. Did you just say, I know you, did you just say, get your head out of your abs?
Your abs.
Okay. When you did, I said, is she saying abs, ABS, like your head is down? But that's good though. Abs.
That's good.
Yeah, abs is.
Like if you're on your dating apps, get your head out of your abs. Which really means get your head out of your tushy.
What do you think right now is the most frustrating thing about dating that people are feeling, the pain? I know it's a lot, but we can narrow it to two or three things.
Yeah, two things. First of all, the fact that people can't stick to one person, that they're always waiting for something bigger, the bigger, better deal to come in next, right? So they don't concentrate on one person. Mm-hmm. We do what's called benching. Benching, yes. Like in sports, a little sports analogy. They keep people on the bench, mm-hmm. for, the next player to come on in. This guy's not doing his job. I'm going to bring the next person in. Benching is tough. It's tough for anyone. For if you don't give someone a chance that you're dating and you're always looking for the next best thing, how is that going to work? That's the first thing. Mm-hmm. Second thing is still with the ghosting. The ghosting is never going away. People get so, they take it so personally and they get so angry and they don't... You gotta let it go.
Let it go.
Let it go.
Mm-hmm. It's actually a blessing in disguise. Mm-hmm. I feel like if someone is letting you go, mm-hmm. early in the phase, mm-hmm. of dating, that's actually that could be a good thing.
Exactly.
You're not wasting your time or energy. You're not getting so invested. But people do take it very personally because we're ego driven. Mm-hmm. That's part of it.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And you're wondering, what did I do wrong? Why did that person ghost, mm-hmm. me? But really, it's all about that. It's about the person, not about you. Mm-hmm. It's not a reflection on you. It's that other person, for whatever reason, didn't have enough chutzpah, mm-hmm. we like to say,
yes.
to call you and say, it's hard. Dating is hard.
Yeah. What would you say to people, like, I have clients that are like, I don't want to be vulnerable. I know what I say, but what do you say?
What do you say? Give me what
you say. Then you don't want to be in a relationship because a relationship is all about vulnerability.
All about vulnerability.
And until you can be vulnerable, there's no true connection. That's what builds that emotional connection with your partner. So I'm curious. Yeah. Do you get a lot of that? Like for people, they kind of want it, but they don't want it, or they don't know what they want. And
you know what? I would probably send them to you first. The people that come to me, right? You go to Elizabeth first, then you come to me when you're ready to date. If someone comes to me and they say to me, I want to date, but I'm scared to be vulnerable, I think they're not ready to date.
Right.
So because I'm a dating coach, that's kind of my jam. Mm-hmm. If someone needs to do inner work, like work on themselves and really find, I would probably send them to a therapist or a relationship person first. Because if you're not ready to be vulnerable, that's something within yourself, right?
All right.
Don't you think?
Yep. Mm-hmm. I agree.
Yeah. So it's just a matter of work.
I really like that term that you use, benching. I'm serious.
Benching, right? Benching.
Because me and Elizabeth talked about this. We didn't use those terms, but it was something along the lines, if you remember, where we were saying, okay, focus on that one person. Give that person a chance. Okay?
Yes, please.
I think options are good, but options can also be a hindrance because you have too many to choose from. So that term benching that you use, of course, again, me being a sports guy, Elizabeth being a sports guy, gal, you know, it makes a lot of sense, you know. And therefore, how can you focus on the one that may be the right one if you know you have, I got 5, 6, 7,
exactly right.
8, 9 others lined up? And I think that's a major issue.
That's exactly right.
It's dating, though.
Yes, it is. But you know, I try to coach that way. I really do. I try to coach with having my clients keep in mind that let's start with one. Let's find one. Let's focus on that one person until it doesn't work anymore. I'm not saying you're going to marry that person. I'm not saying it's forever, but I'm saying give that person a chance. And you know what? When it doesn't work anymore, great. We'll go on to the next. But at least you've given that person, I don't care if it's 3 dates, I don't care if it's 7 dates, I don't care if it's 22 dates. If you are always wondering what's bigger, better, you know, greater coming down the line, you're never going to give that person in front of you a chance. You're never going to.
Boy.
You're not, you know?
Good. Well, I was reading something about that, and they said there's kind of like 3 types of daters, and one was, you heard about that, the maximizer, which they're always looking for that one thing. So that's probably the options person that's benching people because they're always thinking there's something better out there. And then there's the person that's all about it feels good. And sometimes what feels good is not always indicative of a long-term relationship working. But I know we look for chemistry. We look for that spark. But sometimes it takes time to cultivate that spark.
Absolutely. I agree.
Yeah.
And I think it does.
And then there was like the hesitator who's like, they just, it's self-esteem mostly. They don't think sometimes they're deserving of a certain person. So it's just interesting that people, the thing that it classed it all together is people have unrealistic expectations.
That's absolutely, and that's, I feel that with lots of things, with the blending families and with the perfect divorce and the perfect, everyone thinks that the expectations are such, but really you have to, your expectations need to be realistic, right? They need to be.
Right.
You have to be realistic, and a lot of people aren't.
And I'm going to say this also. I like the fact that when you were talking about, you know, focusing on one individual, I like the fact that you had a range. If it's 2 dates, if it's 3 dates, if it's 7 dates, but just focus on that one individual, whether it's those 2 days. I really like how you expanded it as well as contracted it, because the first question most people would have, okay, so do I need to for a whole month? No. If it's the second date and you realize as long as you're focusing on that one, and you realize this is not working, now you move on, as you stated, to the next one, not the next 5.
Right, because the juggling, the juggling, it doesn't work. And I try to explain it to my clients. I'm like, no, I have to keep my options open. I can't commit to one person. I'm like, look, I'm not telling you to commit to one person for an X amount of time. I'm telling you to commit to one person until it doesn't work, right? I call it for now, like dating for now, like just for now. One person until you could go on one date with someone and you don't feel it, right? Great, it's over. But like, let's say you go on 3 dates, 4 dates, 5, just keep going until you're done. 3 months from now, you could still be dating this person, and then you have the conversation if you like it to be long term, right? You don't have to marry him that, but
and it works. Yeah, tell him what you always say about dating. I know you're
going to
say
it.
So Kay's philosophy, my coach in tandem, he always says dating is a trial period. Like there's nothing attached. That's the whole beauty of dating. It's your time to explore, get to know that person, see who they really are. You're not like tied to it permanently. And I like what you're saying. You're saying the same thing, but you got to give it time to see if
it
works.
Give it time.
Because a lot of people do look for that natural fit. And
I'm going to share something with you. Won't believe this. So this is crazy. My partner and I, that's how we did it. We just did it. We just dated. We were like, you know what? And then one day he looked at me, he's like, I'm going off my apps. I'm done. I'm going off everything. And I'm like, oh, okay. And he's like, look, if you don't, whatever. He's like, but I am. And I'm like, okay, me too. We've been together 5 years.
Wow.
So my ex-husband, I call my husband. That's how I taught him to date. I said, look, I said, Mark, you have to go out with one girl. And he does. He dates one girl at a time. Mm. And he dates them until it doesn't work anymore. He had a relationship for a year. It was done. He had a relationship for 3 months. It was done. He will only date one woman at a time.
So you've coached and are coaching your ex as well?
I do. I do.
Two peas in a pod.
Well, when you know them, you know what the gaps are, right? So you're like, no, don't do that. Don't do that on the first date. Don't do that on the third date, I'm even.
Like, I'm like, you have to text her back. He's like, oh, do I really need to text her back?
I love it. I love it. I guess, you know, you did recently do like a podcast interview and you were talking about blending families. You had an interesting viewpoint on that because you have two sons, right?
I do. And it's funny, I might have to come back and talk about this. I'll give you my short version. So I've been with my partner for 5 years and our kids have never met. So my kids have met him, they love him, and I've met his kids, but our children have never been together. Mm. So we don't blend. And I think that people are like, oh my, what do you mean? Mm. I just don't believe in blending families. I feel like my kids have gone through enough. They've been through a divorce. His kids have been through a divorce. They don't need to be mushed together. And the statistics really are not great for blending families. 72% of blended families end in divorce. I don't want to go through it again. I know myself well enough to know that I think you have to be really honest with yourself and say, can you be a stepmom? Can you be a stepdad? And the truth of the matter is that I've raised both my boys and they're both going to college next year. And I'm not really interested in doing it again. Right. But, and I think he knew that going in when we met 5 years ago. I said, I just want to let you know, I will not blend families. I do not want to blend families. I'm not interested in it. And 5 years later, we're just not blending. So it's worked for us, right? And I think that if you don't know what you don't know, mm-hmm. I think everyone assumes that you have to blend. Like you meet, you fall in love, you blend families, you get married. And that's just how it goes.
Right.
But you don't have to. It actually works to not blend. So I think if you have choices, it's nice to know that you have options, right? So that's just my, people are like, what do you mean you don't blend families?
This is the thing though. If it works for you your significant other or partner, then great. I say to Elizabeth all the time, or when we're talking, you hear of other couples, sometimes celebrity couples, where maybe they have an open marriage. Now, I don't agree with that. Or maybe they may allow the other party, look, you live in your house, I'll live in mine. Now, from the outside looking in, we tend to judge and say, oh, that's not right. But let me tell you something. If they have made a mutual agreement and they're in this thing for 5, 10, 20 years, and it appears that they're happy and that they're, you know, doing well in the relationship, who are we to say? So my whole thing is, if you're saying that no blended families and you guys have a mutual agreement about that, then so be it.
Yep. The only problem is that when we don't, it's hard. Like that's the problem, right? And it's funny. We get a lot of pressure because a lot of people are like, well, what do you mean? And we get if you loved him, you would move in with him and his kid. Well, I get a lot of that from married couples who have never been divorced. And my response to that is, well, I love myself enough and I love him enough to know that if we were to blend families, it wouldn't work. Mm-hmm. So that's my answer. Mm-hmm. I've done enough work on myself. And I think I respect our relationship enough to know that it's really difficult. Now, blended families do work. I mean, they do, right? The other percent that happen. But I think the ones that do work, studies show the ones that are actually effective are the ones that they go talk about expectations again. When people go into a blended family expecting that there will be difficulty. If people go into blended families thinking, this is going to be great. This is going to be the Brady Bunch. Oh my God, this blended family is going to be rainbows and popsicles and what? Those are the ones that fail. Blended families that actually, couples that go in knowing that it's going to be difficult and are prepared. Those are the blended families that are the most successful. And there are things you can do, right? Blended families, they work. And the reason they work, there are tips, there are websites, there are, oh my gosh, there's so much great information out there on blended families and how to do it. So I give, and I want to say this, I respect on such an extremely high level those families who are blending. And if you know a blended family, a mom or dad, you need to hug them and give them props and tell them they're amazing, because it is difficult. Mm-hmm. It is really difficult, right?
It is different because it's like you are coming into situations that have already been present before you were there, and habits, and then with the discipline in kids, disciplinary styles, mm-hmm. the yep. kids may have experiences mm-hmm. of not wanting to lean into you just for lots of different reasons. So like it is. Yeah. I mean, I know Kay has really great mm-hmm. example, like of mm-hmm. having a really successful blended family.
Oh, I love that. Mm-hmm. I love that. Yeah. That makes me happy.
And lack thereof. So, you know, it's two sides of the coin. But how would you prevent a blended family if they're school age kids, if that makes sense? I know you said yours are about to go off to college. Yeah, I'm assuming.
Right. Well, ours were school age when we started. So mine were 9 and 11 mm-hmm. when I got divorced, and his were the same age, mm-hmm. like the same ages. We actually have week on, we had to fix it so that we had the same week on, week off. Mm-hmm. So he would have his kids for a full week. I had my kids for a full week. Okay. And then we'd have a full week apart mm-hmm. from our, like they would go to their perspective
okay.
part, like exes, right? So then we have a week together. So Jim and I have a full week together, and then we have a full week with our kids. Mm-hmm. So the nice thing about it is that my kids got me 100%. I was engaged with them 100%, and he was engaged with his kids 100%. Mm. And then when we got together, we were together 100%. Mm. So it's really been, you know, nice. Now, it is hard to go a full week without seeing my significant other, mm. but we talk and we text and we, you know, and there were times that we would like get together, we'd get a babysitter and we'd mm. see each other, but our kids had never actually done anything together. Now, if we were to get married, they would have to meet at the wedding.
They'd be blended then.
No, but you know, it speaks to like I am a big believer that people have to do the relationship dynamics that work for them. That whenever you try to morph into what you think could work based on what you see, because you think that's what works to everyone, I think that's the failure. I do think there's basic tenets in a relationship, but I think you guys are exhibiting like that emotional maturity to say, okay, this is where we draw the line. This is how we respect each other's parenting styles and our relationships with our children, and this is how we hold it sacred. So that's your thing. Like, I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
Divorces are like snowflakes, and each one is different and unique. Yeah. And ours is just really different.
No, everyone has a divorce story. Hence why we do what we do, right? Like, exactly, there's a lot of that out there. Yeah. And I know we're not going to keep you much longer, but I had a question. So if someone's jumping back out there, they're dating and they haven't been out there, like they've been married for a long time or in a relationship for a long time, how do they ease into it? I mean, there's so much happening, like that's changing year to year, 5 years, 10 years. So like, I know you're like, scream.
Yeah, it's a lot. You know what? I think the most important thing, and I like to coach from a place of, authenticity, and just know that I made lots of mistakes. So I like to use my mistakes and tell people the biggest mistake that I made was jumping into dating too soon. I thought I was ready. I'm like, I got this. I'm going to go. I'm going to date. I think it's really important to to love yourself, but also to understand your aloneness, to be able to sit in your space alone and I don't want to say this, just to be able to be alone and comfortable being alone before you try to fill that void with someone else. Does that make sense?
Being content with yourself and your space and so forth. Even if it hurts a little bit, you know, you start to realize about yourself, you know what? I actually can dwell alone for a period of time, because I learned even the more, not only about me, but you know, I get a chance to experience other things without involving someone else.
Exactly. Like someone else isn't going to fill that space for you. You need to fill it.
That's right.
Because I really did. I thought like, oh, well, I'll be okay. And then I realized I was just trying to fill that void of another person mm-hmm. and it wasn't working. Mm-hmm. And you're never going to be the perfect version of yourself. Mm-hmm. No one should be. You should always be growing and evolving and learning and changing. So don't wait to be, you know, people are like, well, you have to be the perfect version. You don't have to be perfect. You're never going to be perfect, but you should be able to be, you know,
content with yourself. And that's actually very attractive, actually. That's mm-hmm. very appealing to people when they know you are comfortable with yourself. But to your point, I think it's just habitual and normal when you come out of a relationship to just naturally want to fall into another one, even though you may not think you're doing it subconsciously. Yeah. It's your habit. It's the way you're used to functioning.
Well, I'm going to give you all this analogy just to kind of, I'm very visual. Let's just say all three of us are looking in a life-size mirror. Okay. All three of us. We're literally like in the fitting room. We're looking at this trifold mirror. Okay. Well, we're focusing on the other person more so than ourselves. But now two of those individuals leave, and now you're only focused with your own reflection.
Yeah.
That's the equivalent when you're actually with someone. Yeah, you tend to look at the other person for the most part. Mm-hmm. But when that person is no longer in the picture, now you're forced to look at yourself. Ooh.
I might steal that from you. I'll give you credit, but I like that. That was good. You should copyright that one.
So Jennifer, tell people how they can find you. The names of your books, where they can find you if they want to hire you as a dating coach.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. It's easy. You just find me on Instagram. It's Doing Relationships Right everywhere. My podcast is Doing Relationships Right. My website is jenniferhurwitz.com. And that's it. That's just simple.
Okay. So you go follow Jennifer Hurwitz and Doing Relationships Right so you can do your relationship right. And we really appreciate you coming on the show tonight. We enjoyed talking to you. And thanks for dropping some pearls of wisdom for us. And we're going to leave it there.
Remember the mirror.
Kay loves doing that, you guys. He loves it. He loves it.
We enjoyed it.
Yes. So thank you guys for tuning in. We're going to take off for now. Remember, you can subscribe to future episodes of Bed Talks on the Anchor app, iTunes, Google Podcasts, and Spotify, and many other platforms. Thanks again, Jennifer, for joining us. And everyone have a great night.